the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
It's a mystery, I suppose.
I mean, with everything going on 6 feet apart, it makes sense for, I guess, like what's going on in the world. But the number six plays a lot into our first segment because you can't stay 6 feet apart playing football. They're going to play six games, apparently. High school football has officially announced it is coming back. It is playing, to the best of their ability anyway. They're going to do a six-game season. Here's the catch, and I want to get these guys in on this because I want to see how they feel about this. Jay, every team makes the playoffs. No matter what, you can go 0-6. You're going to play in the playoffs for this six-game back-to-high school football season.
That's a terrible setup. If I was the commissioner of the MHSAA, why would get the participation shit out of here? Especially, nope.
Commissioner Jay does not approve. Statman Russ Ivanek, I don't know how you feel about this. I just don't see. I get it's the give everybody a chance. This has been the year. This feels like the participation trophy award of the year for sports.
It's so dumb.
Oh, so dumb.
First off, we're in a pandemic. We should be trying to punt this spring anyways.
Yeah.
But I know what we'll do. We'll acknowledge that we shouldn't be playing as much and we'll shorten the season, but then we'll mandatory add more games to everyone's schedule for some reason. What? No. No one. You can't have everyone make the playoffs. You've already acknowledged that you shouldn't be playing as many games as normal, so now you're going to add more to the playoffs? No. That's so dumb. Keep the same criteria. Better yet, push it to March. Listen to Izzo. Mask up today, yesterday, tomorrow, and let's get better then.
Okay.
See?
Yeah. Okay, Jay, go ahead.
The one other point I have for that as well on why it's also dumb is on average there's 8 million high school athletes in our country, and only 6% of them actually make it to the pros each year. So if people are like, Johnny's got to get his reps in, or Becca's got to get her at-bats, and we have to do all these things because it's about their future. It's like, no, it's such a small amount of people who actually make it to the next level. It's not worth it. 6% is not worth a couple people dying. Well, not a single percentage isn't. But it's like,
I hate to break it to
go.
You.
What's the point?
I hate to break it to you. If those professional teams are good at their jobs, they already know about you and you're already on their radar. As much as, honestly, the only one that is probably outside of that comparison is March Madness, because we've seen guys come out of nowhere, have a big bracket, and become lottery picks. Other than that, like if you're playing baseball, softball, football, these people know who you are. You're already on their list. All this little six-game season, whether it's going to college or going to football or college or the pros, all it really does is just kind of give them that little extra tape. It's that little bit of extra tape. Because I hate to break it to you, if you weren't starting, I don't think these six games are going to be what gets you a high draft pick. You'd have to have a March Madness for that to happen, Russ.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, my brother's going through it right now for baseball. They've been looking at him since at least his junior year. This is not new. They don't just suddenly drop in out of nowhere. And even if they do play that, a lot of this is who you know and a lot of it is connection. These coaches know each other. These coaches are still spreading it out. You can still have workouts and tapes to share.
Mm-hmm.
So this six games in September, October is not going to be the difference between little Johnny making the Lions and playing for exactly 3 years before he has to figure out what to do with his life, or having to figure it out 3 years sooner. This isn't the difference. Stop it. And even if you think it is, push it out when it's safe. Get out of flu season. Flu season is going to be the biggest problem for this, and we're just ignoring it for some reason. Oh, the spring's there.
Big Jay, I'll let you go first here because we want to talk Lions football. It's back. We're going to get as much of it as we can. We want to go through as much of it as we can. But I want to ask you, bigger kind of question mark too, like of what were you thinking? the MHSA, Jay said it right the first time, MHSAA throwing out this plan, or this was announced in the Free Press, the news, everything yesterday. GOP has pushed the Big Ten to get the season going again. Isn't it just that point where we need to say, listen, wait till September, wait till spring. We waited through all of summer. We waited through all of this. We went 7 months without pro sports. We can wait another five.
They're both equally dumb, but the fact that people are like preaching and demanding that the Big Ten does, no one's yelling at Yale. They were the first ones not to do it, and they're the smart school, and no one's saying shit to them. And apparently everyone else wants to get along with their lives, so the Big Ten, no, we don't have to do it. Like, yeah. we can be that person who doesn't do it.
We can, we should, and just because you're bored of a pandemic doesn't mean it's over. Like Eric said, we went 7 months without it, and now we're going to bring it back during possibly the most dangerous spot for a re-hit. We've already seen in Europe, they're starting to see the second wave hit, and that's what's coming in flu season. That's why I keep saying it. It's going to spike back up because that's how these communicable diseases work. Oh, push it into spring when we have a chance to do it a little safer.
Go ahead, Jay.
And let's not get it twisted. This is a very sport-forward podcast. Like, we want sports.
Oh,
like,
yeah, we need it.
Sports is literally in the name of our show. Like, we're not trying to tell you, like, we're against this. We want it, and I'd love to see it. But you know what? And I mentioned this during when we were in the thick of it. We have enough sports history throughout the years. You can go back and play old games. People will watch. People will be okay with it. I can promise you no one remembers every single game. So it's that thing of we have enough content to get the real sports fans through. But I said it when they first announced college football, and I'm going to say it again now with high school football. You can't expect professional athletes to be that great in the bubble. How do you expect college athletes? Well, how do you expect high school kids? I literally on a dare ate a scalding hot quesadilla that scorched the top of my mouth for like days. I had blisters. How are you going to expect
You're
some
welcome.
Kid? Yeah, all because of our stat man. How are you going to expect a high school kid to be like, hey, my parents went out of town for the week. You want to come over and have some beers? Well, I can't. I'm in the bubble for high school football. Who cares, man? No one's going to know. Well, you cannot ask a high school kid to give up their Friday and Saturday nights or any other night, let's be honest, for this. As much as sports means, in reality, this means more to the MHSAA than it does to little Johnny, because Johnny wants to have his fun. Sports is great, but if you're not going to college, unless U of M and Alabama and Ohio State and Michigan State are knocking on your door, high school football's fun. It was fun for me. I didn't have these schools looking at me, so guess what? If I was in their shoes and someone looked at me and said, hey, you want to go to Vayner's party tonight? I'm there. You know, it is what it is. So how can you ask these kids to be adults when it's not their time to be an adult? It's their time to be high school kids.
That's the sad truth of it. High school kids are always going to be high school kids.
Absolutely.
And you can only pin them down so much. And I think it's morally wrong to try and hold them to the same standards as professional athletes that we're paying to be in isolated situations. So it doesn't work logistically. It doesn't work morally. It doesn't work logically. You're not, like Eric said, you're not going to be able to pin down a 15-year-old boy who is just figuring out what playing with himself is. you'll be lucky if that keeps him in his room alone.
That really got Justin
going.
You
can't even get them to stop doing the tic-tac. Like, they're busy bodies.
The tic-tac.
We all just aged 5 years.
Oh, God. You know what's funny, though? As Russ is saying that, all that's coming back is flooding back memories of college and high school with these two. And like I said, we all would have gotten kicked off the teams for the bubble breaking. It's just what it is. The tic-tac. Jay, why do you always have to be the grandpa of the show? Jay is literally, he's got pillows reclining him in his room as he's watching sports, talking to his friends, trying to figure out how to work technology. So, Jay, you'll be happy.
You don't even know if I have pants on.
Don't want to know if you have pants on.
I'm betting you don't.
It's not going to surprise me one way or the other. All right, Jay, You're the commissioner. We'll let you go first here. We're excited. We haven't gotten to do this in a long time. No preseason, no real training camp to speak of. It's been since February since we saw a football game. Lions football back this week in Detroit. Is that a Golden Tate jersey? Because if it is, I love it.
It's a Golden Tate jersey.
I love it. Lions return to face the Chicago Bears at Ford Field. Kind of want to break it down a little bit, but before we do, I want to ask you guys, because it's been the big, big story of the last week. Jay, you're a running back guy. You love him so much. Kerryon Swift, I know you. What does the adding of AP, Adrian Peterson, former Minnesota Viking, recently with the Washington Redskins, what does the adding of AP do to this backfield? Are you good with it? Was it kind of one of those question mark, head scratcher, another Lions signing a guy who really doesn't need to be playing football right now kind of signings?
So I'm going to give you a metaphor or analogy, if you will, of how I feel about AP.
He's going to say boobs are good. He's going to say boobs are fun. No. He just found out boobs
are
fun.
We learned that. As a kid, when you build Legos, a lot of the times you have the platform that your Lego set comes with, and you have the weird-shaped Legos that there's like two little circles, and then there's that curled piece. It almost looks like a foundation piece to help build up to what is more important. Adrian Peterson is one of those curled up pieces of Legos because Kerryon Johnson and Swift are at the top of that pillar. So in essence, good. I'm happy we've got AP. He's not what is going to establish and respect our run game. He's just a piece of Lego at the bottom of the pile, while our pieces that are on top are more attractive and will hopefully get us to have a respected run game.
Your sisters melted your Legos, didn't they? I've never heard of this curved piece Lego.
No, I know what he's talking about. It looks kind of like a foot.
I'd have to see it. If I saw it, I'd probably know what you're talking about. Like you're describing that, and I'm thinking to my head, like, what Legos did you play with as a kid? Like, he's the guy that got Lego, but it was like spelled weird because it was the knockoff Lego where they created their own piece. It's Lego.
It's just a really hard Ego. Yeah,
he's got Lego. He's got Legos, not Lego.
You know what piece of Lego I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
But getting back to the serious part, I like what you said about the foundation thing. To me, and I don't know how you feel about this, Russ, to me, this just more feels like we're signing a guy who he's going to be usable on third, fourth down. He's good in goal line situations if we need him. But really, you're bringing in a guy who can mentor these guys. You have a rookie running back, and then you have Kerryon, who, in the amount of games he's played, he's just about finished his first season. He gets knocked out after 6-7 games every year. That this is a good addition locker room-wise. It's a good addition on the field that he can show these guys how to prepare. Listen, he had some off-the-field problems, but it'd be hard to debate that in the last 30 years, Adrian Peterson isn't one of the best running backs the game of football has ever seen. He knows how to prepare. You want him in that locker room. He takes a little bit off of Stafford having to be the veteran guy working with a bunch of young people.
Well, that's fair. And maybe the mentorship role is something more than I've seen from him so far, because the only time he hasn't been the lead guy, like minimum 10 carries per game, was in New Orleans. And we saw the weekly death stares that he gave to Sean Payton before he requested a trade. Mm. So maybe he can be. I don't know what happens before behind closed doors. And Kerryon seems super pumped about it. So if that's the case, awesome. Because that's what he needs to be. Kind of what Eric was saying, you know, third down, power back specialist. He needs to be the parsley on the plate. He can't be the meat. Mm. And what scares me is that he's coming in to be the meat. Dave Burkett reported a rumor that AP was told he could be the starter as early as week one. This is a dude, one season that he's been healthy in his entire career, he's averaged less than 10 yards or 10 carries per game. And that was the New Orleans season. That's it. Every other time he's been on a team because they are going to feed him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he's just the power back, if he's just the third down guy, you know, occasionally things like that, awesome. Then that's good. Then all of your other resources that you put into this run game are actually paying off. In which case, why didn't you just stick with the younger option that has higher upside? Why did you go with a 35-year-old who, granted, good value on $1 million contract, could be up to 2.3, but dude hasn't been the dude since 2016 when he got injured. Right? He hasn't had the same yards per carry. He hasn't had the same broken tackle rate. he hasn't seen more than 50% of an offensive snaps since 2015. He's cooked, and you're giving away potential upside for him. I, frankly, don't like the signing, categorically, okay. because I don't like bringing in a 35-year-old running back. I get the name. He's going to sell jerseys. If he's better in the room than he is on the field, then this can pay off. But that's, I think that's the way it can succeed, and well, that's about it.
Right now, your guess, my guess, anybody's guess who isn't the trainer for the Detroit Lions, whatever we want to guess about Swift, it doesn't sound like Swift is going to be playing week one. Doesn't sound like he's going to have pads on. And it is scary. And it's that question of how much did we know about this when we drafted him, whether it is a small injury, whether it is something he got while working in Allen Park, yada, yada, yada. The Lions have had a very, very, very bad track record when it came to running backs. Cough, cough, Javid Best. So it is that thing of how much we know. So I don't necessarily mind AP being here for the reason of the last couple years in Washington, yes, they did feed him like the premier back. But he knows his time's coming. He's been in the league. I want to say he came in the league in 06, somewhere around there, 05, 06. Yeah, it sounds right. He came in. He actually came in the draft with Calvin. He came in the draft with Calvin and Jamarcus Russell because we could have had him. But I mean, not that taking Calvin was a bad idea, but we could have had him a long time ago. But it's more to me that I agree with you. I don't like signing 35-year-old running backs. I don't like it for that fact. But I do like that if he does come in the way I described it, of he's a locker room guy, he's going to show these young guys how to prepare, what it takes to win football games, how to be a professional. He's going to marginally perform on the field to what we need him. I agree. This guy does not need to be seeing the ball 15 to 20 times a game. 10 carries, third down, specialty situations, use him in the goal line. Other than that, he needs to be on that sideline talking to Kerryon, talking to Swift, keeping these guys involved and knowing what's coming because they're the next step. They're the next guys. Kerryon's already the guy, but, you know, having that veteran presence doesn't hurt, Jay. So I'm not super upset with the signing, but like Russ said, if they signed him to be the workhorse, then anything we did in this offseason is for naught because we clearly showed we have not turned the corner like we were hoping.
Yeah, it kind of echoes to me. And I was just looking up his name because I forgot it. It reminds me of what we did when we brought Reggie Bush in and then when we brought Blunt in. LeGarrette Blunt played the same exact role that AP.
Yeah, CJ Anderson yep. didn't even play here. We got rid of him before he even really did anything. But yes, agree.
It seems like this middling move. Where like, you know, in the same week, Leonard Fournette, granted, he went to the Bucs, so there's probably some selling points there for him to go play for them. But, like, that's not a depreciating asset. That's a young dude with plenty of, like, growth and chance. And we're grabbing the old apple.
I don't see him as a depreciating asset. I don't know that I see him as this big guy that everybody thought he'd be. Granted, Jacksonville is not a good team. But Fournette, like, to me, I saw talent in Fournette, but I also saw something I saw in Kerryon. I saw a guy who He seemed to have a hard time staying on the field. Like, he always seemed to be banged up in some capacity. That's not a bad thing, because I get when you're a back like that, Rush, you're going to take hits here and there. But I want to see a guy that's going to take that hit, be banged up for a half, and then get back out there and give it everything he's got, because that's what we need from you. We already have enough guys who take the hit, and then they're gone for 3 weeks, and we have to bring someone in off a practice squad.
I think that actually gives me the chance to merge your 2 points here okay. perfectly and explain, I think, why the Lions did this. To Eric's point, you're going to get hurt. Kerryon's been getting hurt, so you spell him a little bit, right? You need a committee. This is part of the committee. Well, who has Patricia and Quinn historically filled for this? Well, an old Wiley vet with a proven track record who's past his prime you can get for cheap. Blunt, Anderson, AP. Helps that AP has familiarity with Bevel, right, and that scheme. That's something they also did on the defense at every level. Danny Shelton, Jamie Collins, Daron Harmon, all familiar with the scheme. Now they're doing it on the offensive side, too. It's frustrating. It's a plug. Hey, we needed the vet that knows what's going on. I don't believe that it was that ultimately it was necessary. There's enough other guys that have been in the system long enough. And they're younger, and they have upside. But if he's a rah-rah guy on the sidelines, then I guess it'll be okay. Tinfoil, though, for you guys.
Tinfoil.
Yeah, no, I got a tinfoil. This is actually, I'm trying to talk myself into it. The real reason the Lions signed him, he's 1,053 yards behind Barry. He's 26 rushing attempts behind Barry. He gets either, he passes him on whatever that category was. How do you stop him from getting it? You sign him and you bury him. And that's how we're protecting Barry. Woo!
I would
we're
love
making
it.
Him a player coach.
You know what I want though, Russ? You know what I really want? You said 1,000 and however behind 53. Barry, 53, yep. And 26 carries behind Barry. I want him to have a bang out year, get 25 carries for 1,050 yards, and then it'd be like, listen, man, great, you got us where we needed to be. Have a good one. Then I'm okay with it. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Yes, he will average 42 yards per carry,
yep.
And then we'll say, no, no, sir.
Yep, absolutely. That's what I want. I want these things. But you also made a point that I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about last week, and not in so much as in signing, but with committing. On the defensive side, they got these veteran guys that they can, you know, they can place as mentors. Now we want to think they're doing with AP, but it also shows to me whoever is the lower guy there, the younger guy, they're committing to, because they're not throwing them into the fire with no guidance. They're throwing them into the fire with people that have been in the fire and can say, this is what you got to do. This is how you get out of here. This is how you be effective in this arena with AB, because we talked about Decker. They didn't do it with Decker. They're really just committing to Decker when they're signing. But I like that they seem to be signing guys who they know their time's coming. They know they don't have a lot left. But what they can do is pass along what they do have to the next generation, Jay.
See, I don't know. This is a very much like old me thing, because I'm an old soul at times. I'd rather just have a coach or an assistant to the coach to be that person to say those things and free up another spot on the roster.
Yeah, but
like I get it. Like it works like in hockey more so and other sports, but like I don't know.
All right, it's
probably just me.
Put it this way. Let's say they were all 10, 15 years younger, because all these guys are too old to play. If we had the team we had right now in Detroit for the Red Wings, would you rather have Steve Yzerman and Nick Lindstrom standing on the bench next to Blashill in a suit? Or would you rather have Steve Yzerman and Nick Lindstrom sitting on the bench holding a stick? Not so much for what they can do on the ice, but like they're reaching the ends of their career. But would you rather have them on the ice being able to look at Larkin, look at Sider, look at Valeno, look at all these guys and be able to put that wisdom onto them, but also play with them so that these guys can see firsthand? It's one thing to talk. I can tell you how to throw a perfect spiral. I'm damn sure would rather Tom Brady, you know, be playing with my, you know, playing with me to give me the lesson. No, that sounded bad. To give me the lesson I need. Yeah.
I bet you want Tom Brady.
I would damn sure rather be Tom Brady's backup quarterback to learn from him. I'd rather have that experience firsthand than having you try to explain it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Yzerman both coaching and playing at the same time, but I understand your point.
Well, I get what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Russ. I get what you mean. I feel like in some instances a coach can be valuable, but in other instances a guy wearing the pads playing the game with you can give you that, like even that littlest thing of like, oh, I saw what you did there on the play action, how that little fake made all the difference of making the D end bite, as opposed to if I don't really sell it and the D end knows what I'm doing there. Brett Favre used to. I saw him on Gruden's QB camp years ago. Brett Favre said after, and this is hilarious to find out, after 10 years, he got bored in practice. It's the same handoff, handoff, handoff. So he said he used to fake the handoff and then give the handoff, and as soon as he gave it the ball, he'd fake a slant throw real quick just to see what happened, just out of boredom. And he noticed the DN jumped. So he realized there might be something to that. So he kept practicing, and one day it led to throwing a game-winning touchdown because he faked the handoff, threw a slant to a receiver that he said, just be ready. This is a run play, but just be ready. Threw a game-winning touchdown. So it's that thing of, that's something these guys learned from experience watching Brett Favre, seeing what he did.
That is a hell of an anecdote.
By the way, smiling and nodding doesn't do anything for radio here, people.
It's great radio, isn't it? I was soaking up the picture that you just painted there. I don't really have anything to add to that other than, hey, some great players make terrible coaches. Wayne Gretzky, one of the worst coaches the Arizona Coyotes have ever had. Some are good mentors. If AP falls in that category, then, yeah, this could work.
All right, well, Russ just gave me the perfect segue to another segment we have, but we have to do this real quick.
Can't talk about the kid yet.
Done it for a lot of years. Who's the kid? We've done it for a lot of years.
Steve Nash.
Yeah, there you go, Steve Nash. Done it for a lot of years, but it's been the most fun for me, though, because we don't rarely ever line up on picks. Very rarely. I mean, unless it's a slam dunk throwaway kind of thing. Lions face off against the Bears, week one. I'll give you the usual numbers, and you guys can do with them what you will. Bears are 55% favorite. The spread is +3, so they're not expecting it to be too crazy. Over-under 43.5. So, you know what? He's the stat man, so we might as well. We gave him all the stats. We might as well let him go first here. Russ, week one, Detroit Lions, Chicago Bears. Who you got?
So we'll start it off this way. I'm going with Detroit, but I'd be lying if I said I was comfortable about it. Patricia, 0-4 against the Bears. So deep dive that for a second. Dropped both games with Bears last year, right, without Stafford. So give him a pass. Year before, again, dropped both games to the Bears with Stafford. So what's really the rub here? It's Trubisky, and it's scoring 24 points. The magic number is 24 points with the Bears and Trubisky. If the opponent scores more than 24, they have not won. They're 0-6. If they score less than 24, they're 21-11. Significant difference right there. So do I think the Lions and a healthy Stafford can actually score 24 points? Can they stop Trubisky from having more than, well, he's had a lot of success with the Lions. Let's put it that way. Three of his six best games by passer rating have been against the Lions. So it's going to come down to those two. I think Stafford's going to be able to put up more than 24 points. So I'm going with the Lions. Let's give it a 28-24 and slightly get the over.
Okay. I like it. By the way, did you say lying or lion in that one?
Exactly.
Exactly.
The pun.
Lucky man's got the wife bringing him some food right now. Absolutely amazing. Jay, over to you. Russ, 28-24. Russ, 28-24 victory for the Lions. How about you, Jay? Where are you going?
Time to jump off the rainbows and sunshine over here. I have a short list of things I'm worried about. I am worried about Khalil Mack, as everyone should be. I'm very much worried about Stafford. And I'm worried about us running the ball against the Bears. Last year, they averaged 4 yards per carry, which was like the 9th best in the league. And for a team that's trying to establish itself with the run, and we start against the Bears, and we don't have our new shiny toy in Swift, yikes. What I can guarantee is that Trubisky will probably throw a pick and 5 overthrown balls, which I look forward to watching him flub those around. The Lions should win, and I'm going to give them the win. But it's a very small win. I'm going to take the Lions with the points, but I'm going to also take the under, and we're squeaking out like a 16-20 game here, and it's not going to be pretty. So we might win and feel great, but it's going to be a dirty win.
Okay. It's a straight sweep here. I see this as what we're going to see out of this offense is going to be the benchmark for what we should expect the rest of the year. Stafford's had a lot of time off. He's had a lot of time to try to get himself back. Galladay started out hot, obviously, with everything that happened last year. He didn't really be able to finish the way he wanted to. From what I've heard, I haven't seen the images. I haven't seen the workouts. Apparently, TJ Hockenson doesn't even look the same anymore. Apparently, this guy's pretty big now. So we have TJ Hockenson. You've got Marvin Jones. We've got this backfield that should have some potential. We just signed our left tackle. I think this offense is going to come out firing. Now, I think we're going to see a lot better product than we're going to see on the scoreboard. Scoreboard, to me, is not necessarily going to reflect what this offense does. That being said, I'm kind of with Russ. I think they get to 27, 28 points. But I think the other side, that defense is going to want to make a statement. They were terrible last year. Patricia knows it. Patricia knows you brought me in here for my defense. I can't have a top or a bottom 30 team defensive-wise, so we need to get after it. I think Trubisky has some success. Like Russ said, 50% of the time he's good every time. So I'm going to go with a 27-17 win for the Detroit Lions, getting off to an early start. And look, I hope we do 16 of these. I really do. I'm not, you know, I'm not getting too far ahead of it, but for right now, I'm going to prepare like we're going to get 16 of these and expect to probably only get about 8. Jay.
So we've all got them winning at different levels, but the real question is how many times do we rush the passer? Are we bringing 3 on the first down on defense? Like, what are we doing on that? Might be the better storyline, is what the hell we actually do on defense.
Jailbreak blitz on the very first play.
I just shot everyone out.
I love it.
Just send everyone on the very first play. That's what it needs to be. All right, so obviously Sunday we'll all be glued to our TVs watching this one. Break it down next week. It's kind of weird. We haven't had football to break down. Usually we're already a couple preseason games in. We've already given picks on who, like some sleepers and that. We don't know. We know about as much as you do. We've seen what you've seen. There's not a lot of access at Allen Park this year, so it's kind of hard to get much of that inside stuff. I'm excited to see Stafford. I really am. Jay, I know you could care less. I know you're ready for whoever's next, but I'm excited to see Stafford. I think number 9, healthy. This is probably the most healthy he's ever been in his career because, as we know, he's played 16 games almost every other year with something broken. This time it just so happened to be a vital part of his body that he couldn't really do much with. So excited to see it. Can't wait. Moving on, NBA. We got a lot of little things here. Nothing, unfortunately, to do with the Detroit Pistons, but Justin's an NBA fan, so I've got to give him a reason to talk about it. First and foremost, I'm going to bring up a debate, and I don't think I have a leg to stand on here, but I'm going to give it everything I have. I personally think 99 out of 100 votes was way too much for Ja Morant for Rookie of the Year. How the heck is Zion at least not marginally in this conversation? Ja Morant's a great player. I think he's the face of that team for as long as he wants to be on that team. That being said, I think he got a very easy Rookie of the Year because Zion had problems and the Pelicans, albeit the right decision, are looking in the long term. They're not looking for a guy to come out, have a dunk fest for 2 years, and then we have a Greg Oden and he doesn't play again. They're looking at the 10-20 year, we want this guy to build this city into a NBA powerhouse. We want guys to want to come here. So I get it. But when Zion came in and started playing, Jay, he came in with a fire. This guy battled to almost get these guys into the playoffs. Now, they have some talent. They have J.J. Redick. They have Ball. I'm blanking on their small forward. He came from L.A. He's a really good player, actually. They have some serious talent. So for Zion to not get the credit that he deserves, to me, is just a little off.
So if we're all going to take a turn at tinfoil segments here, here's mine. Zion's established. Zion's not going anywhere. And the league, they have Ja, but they need Ja. They need those two guys to push the next generations of fans. Number one, I think Ja does deserve it the way that he got it. He is flashy as all get out. I don't see Zion making these acrobatic passes and these little finesse touches and moving the ball like Ja Morant is. But back to the tinfoil, I think the league, they need Ja just as much as they need Zion, and Zion's not going anywhere. So I think they want to perpetuate this guy's future.
One, the name was Brandon Ingram that I was blanking. I went and looked it up. But two, you don't see the crazy passes. What you see is him blocking a basketball like it's a volleyball. He put it into the upper deck. Like, this guy is an insane talent. But I agree with you, Jay. I don't think that Zion, right now anyway, I think Zion needs to slim up a little bit and they need to take the kid gloves off. But Zion possesses the ability to all of a sudden have 25-10, and you're kind of going, where did that come from? Because it's a lot of layups and putbacks. Ja Morant puts on a highlight reel. Every basket you go, yeah, that was a good one. And then remember when he did, oh, yeah, that was a good one too. So I see what you're saying. Ja is the flash that gets the people in. Zion is the talent that you know, everybody looks and goes, that's how you want to play basketball. At least that's how I feel, Russ.
No, and I think Justin actually has a point here that not the tinfoily part, but the part that it does help the NBA to have more stars, mm-hmm. right? I don't think this was fixed. I think it ultimately came down to Zion played 24 games, and you're not going to win the Rookie of the Year award when you play 25% of that year. Was he better than Ja? Well, by per 36 stats, yes. In everything except for assists, they were almost identical, or Zion was better. So efficiency-wise, Zion had it, hands down. But he played less than three times, or he played about three times less games than Ja Morant did. And it's a body of work award, so it was given to the person with the better body of work. I would have loved to see how it played out. They both had a full season to do it. But it was Ja. It's going to be Ja. But the Pelicans did the right thing. They didn't draft Zion to win Rookie of the Year. They drafted Zion to be a cornerstone of the franchise. And he's on his way.
All right. Well, from one cornerstone of a franchise, we're going to go to a guy who was the cornerstone of the Phoenix Suns for a very long time. And you just said right decision. So I'm going to ask Russ real quick. Did the Brooklyn Nets make the right decision in hiring Steve Nash, Jay? Just in case you didn't know the name.
Not Jason Kidd.
He's already had his chance. Did they make the right decision in hiring Steve Nash, a guy who, albeit is one of the greatest point guards of all time, is an absolute phenom, a multiple-time MVP winner, but has no real head coaching experience. All he really has is, for a couple years there, when KD was in Golden State, he worked with Kevin Durant quite often to help him develop his game, try to get him a little more of that guard ability, like the ability to play more like a guard, because he was quick. He had the finesse, and Steve Nash is the guy you want for that. So, that being said, no real credentials. I don't know if either of you guys heard of it. Stephen A. Smith went on a very big tirade about this being one of those hires that doesn't make a lot of sense because there are other people who were more qualified that should have gotten this job. So was it the right call, Russ?
So I waffle on this one.
Okay.
Ultimately, I'm going to go with no, it wasn't the right call. Because like you said, all he's got coaching-wise is a couple years as a player development consultant with Golden State, which gives you something, I guess. Probably more than Jason Kidd had when he was hired for the exact same position with the exact same team. We also saw how that went.
But does it get him the inside because it was with Kevin Durant, the number one player on the Brooklyn Nets? Do you think that was kind of the inside track?
Yes, and that's kind of why I waffle on it. Because when you're an NBA coach, there's two things that have the highest correlation to your success as an NBA coach. The talent on your team, and does the talent on your team hate you or not? So if they like you, Ty Lue, right, you will be successful. That's how that works. You need player buy-in. Being a Hall of Fame player, it really helps you get that buy-in. Whether or not you know the X's and O's and how to motivate other players is a completely different matter. You first and foremost need the players to let you in the room. It's different than most other sports in this way that we've gone through the NBA empowerment period. It's fully there. It is a star-driven league. Your coaches ride side saddle to your superstars, and that's just how it is in the NBA. Not saying it's bad. The troubling part, Steve Nash is not the only Hall of Fame player that could become a coach or wants to become a coach. There's plenty of them out there. 80% of the league is black. Steve Nash is not. We have 5 black head coaches in the NBA. That's it. That's a staggeringly low number for a large pool of players who have the exact same qualifications as Steve Nash. So I get why that is an issue in the hire. And I don't like it from that perspective. I don't like it from the perspective that he has no coaching experience at all. If he was an assistant for a season, I'd feel better about this. But it's because he is Steve Nash and because he has connections. And sometimes in sports, that's all you really need because nepotism's a real thing, especially in sports. And here it is. Seems like a short-sighted hire for me.
Yeah. All right, Jay, I'm going to pose a question to you. Before I do, I just want to say, Russ literally mentioned one of the only other names I've heard who was up for this job and was a candidate, and that's Ty Lue. People need to stop considering Ty Lue a good qualification for an NBA head coach. I'm going to tell you why Lue got the head coaching job in Cleveland. He was one of the only guys who, when it came down to the last 10 seconds, would be okay when LeBron walked into the huddle and said, "Shut up, this is what we're going to do." I hate to break it to you, LeBron James has been the head coach of every basketball team he's ever been on since he went to Miami. since he went to Miami. Early in his career, again, I'm blanking on names today. He had a head coach in Cleveland early on in his career. The guy went on to coach the Lakers and multiple other places. He was a guy that was outspoken against LeBron. He would tell LeBron, no, I'm the head coach. This is what we'll do. LeBron went to Cleveland. Eric Spoelstra has never said a word in his life that LeBron didn't already tell him was okay. Then he comes back. He has I believe the guy's name was David Blatt, who played for, who coached for him afterwards, had no head coaching experience really in the NBA, but was a guy LeBron could talk over. Ty Lue, a guy he can talk over. Now he's in L.A. Frank Vogel's not going to do anything to screw up that job. He'll let LeBron call the plays if he really wants to. So I like Ty Lue. Ty Lue has an NBA championship as a coach with LeBron James, with Kyrie Irving, with these guys who I can promise you were the ones calling the shots. Ty Lue was really just the talking head. And that's fine. That's great. He played in the NBA just like Steve Nash. But Ty Lue was that guy who just was there because you technically have to have a head coach for an NBA basketball team. Otherwise, it looks like a pickup game, and I think LeBron would have probably rather that. But I want to ask you, Jay, Russ said no real head coaching experience, but does being a Hall of Fame, arguably one of the greatest point guards of all time, guy who clearly knows this game, is that enough experience to kind of overrule the, oh yeah, I've never really called the X and O's day in and day out, but I know the X and O's and I know how to be a successful, I know how to make this team successful. Does that overwrite the lack of coaching experience?
See, I don't think so, because like, as we have this conversation, I'm also torn because I think you need both parts. I don't think you can just be the qualified guy who has experience but isn't the Hall of Famer, and then vice versa. Like, you need equal parts of it. Like, I consider it like, all right, John Beilein. He had qualifications, but he didn't have his team, and his team ran him out. And then my other kind of wacky comparison is that there's been, like, in different sport, but there were rumors that Pierre Maguire was being considered for the GM job for a hockey team because he's a person and he has no experience. And, like, neither one of those work. I think you have to have both that blend to make it work. Or you have the superior talent that I guess kind of still is LeBron James, and you just have him take over and win a championship for you. So, personally, for me, I'd rather have both. It's like having both sides of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You want to put them both together and eat it. But if it works with just being not Jason Kidd, and you're the head coach of the team, and your team works and they win for you, like, what are you really coaching, though? It's kind of gimmicky in a way. So I'd say you got to have both.
And honestly, and this is a whole different issue, and I don't want to go too far off topic here, but I think Beilein, love Beilein. U of M basketball fan, wished he would have spent his whole career here. He had the opportunity, he went. I can't fault him for it. Beilein, to me, was the perfect example of the dynamic between college and NBA. College, you're there, you have to perform, or you're gone, like, you're not playing. You're there, that's your couple years to really show that you can play at that next level. The coach makes all the money. It's a very different dynamic when you're talking to these guys, and all of them have signing bonuses bigger than your actual contract. You can't talk to them the way you can talk to college athletes, if what he said is true, and I obviously he lost his job, so I'm going to say it was, but if what he says was true and how he acted, you can't talk to college kids like that either. Like, there's no distinction here, but that's the thing. It's that exact thing. It's the same reason why everybody says, oh, Harbaugh came back to U of M because he couldn't make it in the NFL because, you know, the players were making more than he was. Yeah, you can't. Like, some people are more predicated to college because they know how to motivate in a way that, like, you know, that isn't tailored to divas who think they're better than everyone else. So I think Beilein really had that, and that's why it didn't work for him. That and that Cleveland team was a sinking ship anyway. I mean, that team wasn't really going to, you know, stay afloat much longer. There had to be a scapegoat. Unfortunately, it was John Beilein. I just wish it would have sunk really quicker so that we could have just kept Beilein. And I love Juwan Howard. I love Juwan Howard, but Beilein got us to natties. We didn't win them, but he got us there. Once Juwan does it for us, I'll be there.
I think I found a sore spot, but yeah, continue.
But I'm saying, like, that conversation, you can go in a million different directions because there's a million different points that can be made for what happened there. And all of them stem back to just how different it is from college to NBA, and the fact that a head coach in the NBA or in any real sport, the head coach, to some extent, you're really more are just kind of the talking head. It's up to the players. Whereas in college, you are the guy that has to get everything prepped, because these college kids have a whole nother thing that's really their job that is tailored to it. Whereas in pro sports, this is your job. If you're not living, sleeping, eating, breathing hockey, basketball, baseball, football, you're not really doing your job correctly. So that's how I feel about it. Last topic before we move on, we want to talk NHL playoffs and the fact that apparently the Dallas Stars made a deal with Satan. But before we do that, last week, almost right after the show ended, Richard Jefferson made a comment that Giannis is Scottie Pippen. He's not Michael Jordan. He needs that guy. Now, I want to break this down and say, one, it's not that bad to be Scottie Pippen. Any other team in the league in the 90s, Scottie Pippen is the best player on that team. It just so happens that Scottie spent over a decade playing with not the best guy on the team, playing with the best basketball player ever. Jay, you watched The Last Dance. I don't think you're going to disagree with me on this. But the reason I took offense to it is because there's a difference there. Scottie was the best player on any other team. There was still someone better than him somewhere in the league, Michael Jordan. Giannis is the best player on the planet. There is no, he doesn't walk into other gyms and someone, he goes, okay, there's that guy. He's better than me. That doesn't happen. You can make the case for Luka. You can make the case for LeBron. There are cases that can be made, but at the end of the day, Giannis is number one until someone proves he's not number one. Obviously, they got dethroned by the Miami Heat in a weird-ass series. We're going to go to that later. One of us has a funny player of the week from that one. But Giannis got hurt in the last couple games. He couldn't really be himself. I want to ask you, Russ, Jefferson's comments, no matter how you want to take them, was it a comment that you see truth in, or was it a comment that just was made that got him on ESPN a little bit more than he usually is?
Oh, it was that he got buzzed, because it's a clown show. And then that's it. Let's break this down for a second. You touched on my main point here. Is he just tried to use being Scottie Pippen as an insult. Like, that's the furthest thing from an insult to begin with. But also, let's look at the structure of this. He's trying to say he's Scottie Pippen. He needs someone better than him on his team to win. Never mind the fact that Jordan also had Pippen, right? So you're saying he's not Michael Jordan. Yeah, he doesn't need someone who's also a Hall of Fame player to play alongside him. Like, either way, this is broken. That you're either saying he needs to be someone who also needs to be a Hall of Fame player, or he is someone who needs a Hall of Fame player. Like, yeah, no shit. You need two superstars to win in this league.
Absolutely.
Like, what? At the face of it, this is a completely clown show argument. Never mind that they're completely different styles of player, which is, that got LeBron going, that got Pippen going.
Well,
I'm not him. And
I got it right here. I'm not Giannis. I don't have back-to-back MVPs. He will in a matter of days. And he's not me. And this is what I love, is going right back at Richard Jefferson. The question is, who were you as a player? Richard Jefferson was a role player at best throughout his entire career. Nothing wrong with that. He still played in the league for a large amount of time. But, Rush, you touched on the other point I was going to make that I didn't want to take because I knew both of you would agree with me on it. Jordan didn't win shit before Pippen. Like, he was competitive, but everyone realized, hey, they're going to make it to, like, the Eastern Semi. They may even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Jordan's going to burn out by the time he gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, because he's doing it by himself. It's the same thing that happened with LeBron. LeBron got the Cavaliers very early in his career to the Eastern Conference Finals, but he had no gas by the end of it because he had to average 35 and 15 a night just to keep them in the games. LeBron also had a very large problem early in his career. He was a very, very unclutch late-game scorer. He just could not score late in games. But Jordan never won anything without Pippen. And that's not to say that Scottie Pippen was the only guy that would have gotten him over that hump. There were other people in the league that you could have paired. It just turned into that perfect marriage of a drive, Jay. But I guess to say, is it weird that no matter what in that conversation, whenever it's said Jordan is Batman and Pippen is Robin, it's always that sidekick role that Pippen has to take?
You cut out a little bit. Say that last part again.
Is it weird to say that in these days, it's not Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan? It's always referred to as the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. Pippen is the sidekick. He's the Robin to Jordan's Batman.
They should be more equals. Like, they should be looked at that they were both parts to make it work. And the fact that Jefferson, like, if you really think about it, Richard Jefferson is winning right now. He's getting exactly what ESPN and them wanted. Like, full disclosure, I didn't know he retired in 2018. I thought he was a teammate while making this comment. Which led me to my other fun fact that he works for ESPN, and he got to get this tweet, and then he was on the Get Up show with Greeny and all of them because they had to interview him, of course. The thing that gets me is that it's like Russ and you were both saying, it's not wrong to be either of them. You need both for success. So that ends that right there. But if you look at his tweet, he phrased it as, there, I said it, dot, 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 as if we're all waiting for someone to make this bold claim. That this is just a little, look at me, I'm cute in the corner type move by Jefferson, who's not an active basketball player.
All right, you walked me right
in. I kind of discredit the whole thing.
You walked me right into my next question, so I'm coming right back to you. Take the tweet for what it is. Is it finally time for Giannis to accept? He either needs to get someone else to come there, or Giannis needs to start looking elsewhere if he wants to be in this conversation of a perennial title contender.
With my very short and fresh knowledge of the league, that seems to be the winning formula. It's either moving parts or acquiring parts to make it work and win. So the answer is yes to both. He either goes or people come. Like, that's what the Brooklyn Nets tried to do, and they thought they were going to win with three different pieces, and it failed up right out in space. Like, that's what Golden State won with. That's what LeBron has won with in a couple areas. That's the recipe for success right now. So, yeah.
Okay. Rusty?
Yeah, the Nets have more superstars on IR than the Bucks have to play with Giannis. Like, that's for, yes, of course he needs someone else. You're not going to win a title. I don't care how good you are. You're not going to win a title in the NBA today with Chris Middleton as the second-best player on your team. You're just not. I mean, that's how good Giannis is, that in the big three eras, the dynamic duos that we have everywhere, that he's standing on his own with a guy that the Pistons decided, yeah, we don't need him. I don't want him to leave Milwaukee because, God, I don't want him to end up with the Lakers. That would just break my heart. But they need something else. And I don't know what it'll take to get him. They got to start getting creative now.
Okay. I agree. I think I would like Giannis to be that guy that can stay his career in Milwaukee, can get Milwaukee over that hump and become a competitive team. But I agree with you. Chris Middleton, he's a great player. If you're going to make the comparison, he's not Giannis is Scotty. He needs someone a little bit better. Now, whether that's through the draft, through trade, through free agency, I don't know. Today, there's a million different ways to do it, but he needs to start lobbying these guys. He needs to start saying, hey, listen, I understand L.A. and New York and Florida. Those are the places. I understand, but like, we can do something here in Milwaukee. We're that one piece away. You get here, we got a chance. Now, whatever he thinks it is, if it's another big man, if it's a skilled, you know, if it's bringing in a Kyrie or, a Steph Curry or something like that, a skilled guard that can make it happen, that's for someone far wiser than me about basketball to decide. But it needs to be that. He needs that next little piece because they have talent. They just don't seem to have the right amount of talent at the right time. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, I'm going to shut up for a few minutes. I'm going to hand it over to Russ. We've got NHL playoffs. Again, like I said, Dallas may have made a deal with the devil, or Jamie Benn may have finally gone down on someone and the world's rewarding him for it, but I don't know what to do here, Russ. Update us a little bit on the NHL playoffs.
So, to address Dallas right away, series tied 1-1. We got dueling shutouts here. Khudobin got his first career playoff shutout on game one. Leonard responded with a shutout in game two. I'm sitting here watching this, and it suddenly dawned on me. Every year when the playoffs start, we go through the whole, well, if their goalie gets hot, you don't know what will happen, and it's happening. Yeah. And now we're all going, how could this have happened? Well, the exact thing that we've been saying to watch out for. Khudobin's playing out of his effing mind, and Dallas is here now.
Is there a bigger cliche though in sports? Like, well, if the goalie gets hot, or well, if their bats get going, you don't know. Well, no
right?
shit. If the bats get going, you score runs. That's how you win baseball games. Like, I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
It's just that cliche of, well, if they get going, well, what if they don't get going? Well, they're gonna suck. Like, that's the opposite of that coin.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you don't score, you're not gonna win. And if hot take, right?
Oh shit.
That's the title of the show, ladies and gentlemen. That's the title of the show.
It's frustrating. In the bigger picture, we had Colorado-Calgary here. So, oops. Good job, guys.
Stupid. You should have them.
No. I had the Chicago Blackhawks here, but no one wanted to agree with me, and it created bad juju in the world.
I'm pretty sure I would have kept that one to myself if I were you.
Okay, fair enough.
But I digress. Yep. Going to the other side, Tampa up 1-0 over the Islanders. We did have half of that one right, and we were a Game 7 loss away from getting this exactly right. We had Tampa-Philly, ended up with Tampa Islanders. Game 1, 8-2, though. That is more than the combined score of any two games that the Islanders have played in this postseason so far. You total up the highest goals that they've allowed in regulation out of any two games. Pick them. I don't care. Tampa scored more than them in Game 1. It's like they heard, oh, Stamkos is out, and you're a strong defensive team. We'll show you. We'll score 8 points, and Braden Point will tie a franchise record with 5 points in a playoff game. This team cannot be stopped. They're finally here, and our pick for them to go to the Stanley Cup Finals is looking very smart, if not chalky, right now. Game 2 is tonight. We'll see how that goes. Still no Stamkos, but Point is locking up the Conn Smythe as we speak. He's well on his way. It literally will take Khudobin to stop him, because I think that's the ultimate unstoppable force, immovable object. And we're on our way for a clash between them and the Stanley Cup Finals. It could go down. Jamie Benn. But that's where we are, guys. We got 1 out of 4 right in the conference finals. It's a good thing we don't try and do this for a living.
You're going to go, Jay, but I'm going to put a little extra on you, because through all of this, you have been a Barry Trotz, New York Islanders, Trotz nose supporter. So I want to ask you, after that game one, and obviously that doesn't happen every day in a hockey game. So it's not like I'm saying here comes 8-2 every time. But what I'm saying is, does Trotz know? And are those Islanders still that team that you think pull the upset? And we're going to see a Dallas Vegas against the Islanders Stanley Cup?
It's like that scene in Dodgeball where he bled his own blood. Barry Trotz needed to lose in order for him to win. So I'm still very comfortable that we're going to get a good series out of the Islanders.
Dwight Goodman lost, though. He bled his own blood and then lost.
But my reference stops at the quote. Like, I don't care about the ending of that movie. Like, fuck that. We're talking about hockey.
Well, that's just recreating.
Did you just pick the favorite in a famously underdog story who lost, and you're like, I know, they'll win. They were like them.
You're like rewriting history to benefit your comparison. I know what'll happen. I know what'll happen. I know here. Robert Horry won't make the three-pointer, and the Pistons will win back-to-back titles for the second time. Oh. I rewrote history. Like, I get,
that's
or Brandon Inge will remember how to hit a baseball, and we won't get swept by the Cardinals. Like,
no, I wouldn't say that.
I get what you're saying, but I don't
Barry
know.
Trotz,
I mean,
man.
I like Barry Trotz. I really do. I like even more that after years of struggling, Tavares ditches camp, and they become good. Kind of like when, Bryce Harper leaving Washington, and then Washington wins a World Series. It was, nothing brings me more joy than these guys abandoning ship and then that team getting what it deserves. But listen, this is a very, and I can't say this word enough, so I'm going to say it two more times, very, very good Tampa Bay Lightning team. It has, even if Stamkos isn't playing, apparently, you have Braden Point, you have Nikita Kucherov, Vasilevsky. Bring in Stamkos. There's just too many long names on that team to get past the Islanders.
I just like a good underdog story, that's all.
It's kind of like when Joe's Gym didn't have Steve the Pirate, right? Like Steve Stamkos, Steve the Pirate, they were both out. But it's okay, they still had their main scorers. They still had the main contributors.
They absolutely did. Gordo got mad, and they did good things. Go ahead, Jay.
My one last programming note for the NHL real quick. I do find it interesting that half the teams left remaining have either been created by or are currently being created by ex-Red Wings people. Jim Nill is the one pulling all the strings for Dallas, and Yzerman built the team that is still on its track with John Cooper. So just don't forget where these guys came from.
And to add to that, Gerard Gallant was the first coach of the Vegas team who helped mold a lot of these players into the system they play now. DeBoer changes a little, but his blueprints are all over there.
Okay, on to another topic.
Just your weekly, it's your weekly reminder that we're the footnote of other people's success still. I'm continuing on this path.
We'll be a footnote to a footnote, and I, sir, will be the note. All right, here we go.
What was that from? Hang on.
No, that's from it's from a movie called Almost Heroes. It's the one of the last movies Chris Farley ever did. It's with Matthew Perry from Friends, Chandler, and it's what if it's the true story of what if instead of Lewis and Clark they sent a second team of people that were a little less qualified, and it was Matthew Perry and Chris Farley play the Lewis and Clark characters, and that's what Matthew Perry says in the movie. He goes, when the history books were written, Lewis and Clark will be a footnote to a footnote, and I, sir, will be the note. So it's just a great line. I love it. It's awesome. It's, if you haven't seen it, Almost Heroes, it's a hilarious movie. It's great. Great time. Real quick, we kind of went through it because it was all we had to talk about for a while there. FedEx Cup wrapped up the other day. Dustin Johnson comes away with the victory, and I got to tell you guys, we spent the last couple years sporadically covering golf, putting in picks. Russ picks Dustin Johnson left and right, yet finally decides to pass on him, and this is when DJ kicks it into gear. Can you pick Phil Mickelson for like the next 6 months so he'll win something in the future for me? Like, seriously, you might be the jinx.
No, I can't. All I can tell you is that when you just keep going back to your Johnson and just beating it over and over and over, a little rest can pay off dividends.
I'm sure Pauline thanks you for that one.
Quality over quantity.
And obviously, the season restart. It's weird to say the season restarts in September, but because we still have a couple more months in the year. Season's going to restart. They do Safeway this week. We're about a week or two out from the U.S. Open, so we'll obviously cover that when it gets a little closer. And then I know, Jay, real quick before we get to play of the week, I don't know about you, but I know me. We are looking at a weekend where if everything shapes out the way it's going to and some things, maybe if one or two things changes, we could have a Sunday or a weekend where you get some college football, NFL football, and the final two rounds of the Masters at Augusta in the fall. I don't know about you, but I don't think I can draw up a much better sports weekend than that. I understand once a year we have the perfect storm where you get hockey, football, like you get all of them at once. But this one is just, it's a little bit better. Obviously, your boy Tiger Woods defending champion. So, I mean, that just to me sounds like a weekend that I might have to call in sick and lie that I have a disease that I don't really have just so I can be there, so I can sit around and watch it.
So how do I do that but from my own house so I can enjoy all those things without being interrupted?
You pull out, take your wallet, pull out a credit card that has the largest limit on it, and then you tell the girls, Mommy's going to take you to the toy store and you can have anything you want. It's going to buy you at least a couple hours.
Right, hang on. Quick parenting tip. That will backfire in my face because I'll have more toys to clean up and unpackage and cardboard and recycle and batteries and screws and the hell I'm already living.
Yeah, but so guess what? Guess what? You'll have it on you'll have it on Monday morning. Saturday and Sunday will be great. But no, I can fix this for you. Mommy's going to buy you any toys you want, and then you're going to keep them at Grandma and Grandpa's house.
The old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo. I don't know about you, Jay. It's a weekend I'm really looking forward to. I think it's going to be the perfect storm. If everything keeps going the way it is and we can get football to work, like basketball and baseball for a while there, it kind of went up and down, and hockey have worked, this could be a pretty fun time. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. All right, we're on to play of the week. Kind of all over the place. Interesting week in golf. Russ mentioned hockey. We got a couple plays there. Going back to the Miami-Milwaukee game. So let's get started. I'm going to let... You know what? Let's let Jay go first here. Jay, plays of the week, whichever way you want to go with it. What are your two picks?
Let's start with my play of the week because it's the more notable one. And I don't even need the goal. I don't need any, none of it. It is simply Kucherov being able to have the foresight to have a puck cart come towards him and the finesse. When he finessed, like I watched Ja Morant clips and I go see Kucherov do this finesse job of a puck going, oh, here you go. Oh, you take that. I'll go down here. Oh, I scored. Oh, but I did that. It's the most perfect apple I've seen in a long time, and it sounded like this.
It'd be a 2-on-1. Kucherov's going to the net. Braden points. Spots in. Scores. There they are again. You turn the puck over. Shattenkirk looks for two guys. The long flip. Look at this play. Turned his blade over so that it flipped up over Devon Taves, then goes to the net and gets the return pass.
It's palpable. My heart is beating. A lot of things are beating. It was a beautiful play. Going to not so palpable things. I'm going to probably ruin his last name because I'm getting nervous about saying it right now. I think it's Novak Djokovic.
The D is silent. Djokovic. Djokovic.
Djokovic. All right, there's a little ooh in the middle of it. Djokovic. This motherfucker. I think I saw something that this is his own tournament that like he set up or some shit like that.
Maybe.
He was the number one seed. He gets pissed at something, and he, like, mid-hitting a ball back to the line judge, he looks at the line judge, and there's a slow-mo of him going, oh, shit, I shouldn't have done that. Great, it's going towards her throat. I'm sorry. Like, you watch him experience every single emotion, and it sounded like this.
And he pounces.
Game going.
Some good wheels up to the short ball. Oh, dear, we've got a serious situation on our hands here. You could, well, Novak, understandably, extremely concerned with the seriousness of this situation. Quickly on hand to help out. The trainer is not too far away. The supervisor as well. Chair umpire is out of her seat.
I'm sorry, but like, you took a tennis ball to the throat, and they're still very, very calm in the play-by-play.
So unnervingly calm.
It looks like she's taking it to the esophagus, and you hate to see it, but a Djokovic with just, he looks so broken up about it. But you know what I love about this, Jay, and I don't know if you've seen this or not. John McEnroe, Hall of Fame tennis player, notorious for berating umpires, treating him terribly, actually went on ESPN the day after and called what Djokovic did an accident. He didn't intentionally do it, whether you believe it or not. He called it unconscionable. Why anyone could do that? It's a disgrace to tennis. What? How is that a disgrace? But you yelling and cussing at umpires is deemed okay.
It makes no sense, especially that he didn't mean to do it. Like, he means to take a racket and hit a ball and put the ball where he wants to put it. Like, he literally means to do that every time he gets on the court. So the fact that he knew. And he was like, oh, shit, I did that.
Yeah.
It's not a good look. So that's my weird play of the week.
Absolutely. All right, so there's Jay's play of the week. Pretty fun. I mean, definitely a high and low there. A great goal followed by a woman, you know, not being able to breathe for 5 to 6 minutes. Russ, over to you. Your plays of the week, whichever way you want to go about it, man.
Well, I'll break the ice a little bit. I'll go with the funny play of the week a little bit, so that we're not talking about throat punches for death. So I actually turned on some NBA because I was trying to figure out, all right, what in the hell is happening with the Bucks? Are they going to get eliminated? I felt bad I hadn't watched more of it, so I turned it on just in time to see Dragic line up from the corner, lift up a three for the win potentially. Just to see it get stuck, the game get stuck, we're going to OT. Good job, bud. You had one job.
Crowder looking. Butler tries to go backdoor. Dragic puts it up. Wedgie finishes up the regulation. We're going to overtime.
Nothing has summed up, I guess we're not done here, more than just the ball getting stuck on the rim. We'll get that after commercial. See you guys later. My actual play of the week, the enjoyable one, first off, Justin stole mine. He's welcome to it. Good job. You beat me to it. You earned it. Plus, I know what Eric says, so I'm going to go with the Hail Mary here. I'm going with the clearly a deal with Satan, as we've established. Anton Khudobin with a crazy save off the shoulder, one of many that he made on the way to his first playoff shutout. Let's hear how it sounded.
Ben Sagan and Radulov all played on different lines for the most part in Game 7. And again here tonight, Schmidt with a shot. And then the attempt by Riley Smith to flex back behind the goal.
Good effort by Khudobin to get back with that Smith chance that Kenny was just talking about. Wow, what a chance.
Just all over the place, making saves with every part of his body. Intentional or not, the dude's playing at another level. Hopefully it helps me in the polls.
Hey, it was a great save. When you had me go get it, I watched it a couple times. It was like the guy is playing. It really is true. If they get hot, they could be pretty good.
Oh,
they
God.
Could. They could. I'm gonna show you the highs and lows of a game Jay and I love so much, and that's golf. I'm going to go off of my funny play because if you're listening to this and you play the game, at some point this has happened to you. Arguably the greatest player in the world, Rory McIlroy. Jay, I know what's happened to you. I have videos. Rory McIlroy hit a shot just a little too far, and for his second shot, tried to go after it, and, well, this happened.
Rory went through the fairway for the second straight day.
Yeah, he's going to be trying to land this in that front apron. 198 there, and this is a bad lie. It's going to take all his power and strength to get this to carry.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she was sitting down in there. I didn't see that shot, but, you know, it's not surprising.
You can hear the splash. That's what I love. You can hear the splash. For those that didn't see it, Rory chunked the ball about 20 yards into the water. My dad actually told me I was playing. My first thought was, when did they start letting amateurs play on the PGA Tour? Like, that was a shot you see out of a weekend hacker, not out of a guy who is supposed to be the best at his craft. That being said, Colin Morikawa, out of a bunker, this is what it sounds like when you are the best at your craft.
This is how Colin Morikawa started his day. Hit his second shot, buried lie at the first, and then just watch what happens.
Well, this is virtually impossible. And David Faraday said he thinks it's the most difficult bunker shot he's ever seen hold. And I might have to agree.
47 feet. I cannot recall seeing a buried lie, a shot hold out from this kind of distance ever. And you're a guy that knows a little bit about bunker play, Zing.
Well, I'll tell you what, he could teach me a thing or two. That
it was an amazing play. Ben's like crazy to go in, holding it. Out of a bunker is tough enough, but out of a bunker that literally came up to his waist, so he's got to get it airborne quick, and then to have it snake out like that. Amazing play. Colin Morikawa's had a hell of a PGA Tour season. Could definitely make a case for, you know, one of the best in the league or on the tour right now, and I think you're going to see a lot out of him. He might even be the pick of one of us here in the next couple of weeks when we have a major coming up, but that's for later. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. That's going to do it for us here in Armchair Sports Talk. As always, we appreciate taking the time to listen. Listen, guys, I mean, I think I can, there's a million ways to end the show, but I think the best way, because we haven't been able to end it this way in about 9 months, is go Lions?
I think the question mark's appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're going, I don't know, but go Lions.
Forward down the field.
Forward down.
That's where they're going.
Absolutely.
Oh, that song.
My thanks, as always, to Sergeant Stalty, the you know, the commissioner of the show, the old soul of the show, the guy who apparently can't tell the difference between Steve Nash and Jason Kidd. All those NBA players just are the same to him for right now. He's figuring it out. Sergeant Stalty, I appreciate you being on today, buddy.
Hey, you know what? As long as you admit when you're dumb, it solves half your problem. So, Jason Kidd, whatever, Jason Tatum, we're going to get them all sorted out. Don't worry about it.
As always, Statman Russ Ivanek threw a lot at you today. The man, I'm still trying to find the sports topic that he's not, can't be somewhat knowledgeable about or sound like he's knowledgeable about. I say it all the time. He needs to make it like on a business card. I'll make you sound smarter than you really are, Russ Ivanek.
Well, that's what I do for a living, and I'm more than happy to do it with you guys. So I'll just leave you with the thought of Jason Kidd, Billy the Kid, Kid and Blay. Nets ain't going to win nothing with them anyways.
And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.